Hello, and welcome to our next Jumpstart, Microsoft Virtualization for VMware Professionals. I'm Simon Perriman, I'm joined by Matt McSpirit, and we have a great day of training here planned for all of you guys that are new to Hyper-V, new to Microsoft Virtualization, and current VMware professionals that just want to learn a little more about how our products compare to each other. Now, let me just introduce myself briefly here. I'm a technical evangelist working with Microsoft. I've been at Microsoft almost 6 years now, spending 4 years working on the product engineering group at Windows Server High Availability, so building clusters and designing virtual machines to run on those clusters. In my current role, I'm a technical evangelist covering all of our private cloud technologies, which includes virtualization, System Center Suite, and several pieces of Windows Server. And I'm joined by Matt today. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Thanks, Simon. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're from. My name's Matt McSpirit. I'm one of our technical product managers here at Microsoft, focused on Windows Server and management. I've got a lot of experience and history working with our partners and our customers around those technologies, helping them understand the benefits and technical capabilities. I'm MCSE, Microsoft Virtualization Certified, and a VMware VCP, but unfortunately, unlike Simon, I don't have any patents to my name at this point. And I've got a lot of experience and really want to help you today understand just how you can compare Hyper-V and VMware and some of the surrounding technology and help you make decisions around those technologies going forward. So it's going to be a good day, and I'm really looking forward to working with you on this.
Thanks, Matt. So let's talk a little more about some of the expectations with our target audience here. We're speaking to our IT professionals here, so we do expect some basic background in servers, virtualization, key infrastructure components such as storage and networking. But one of the things Matt and I are trying to do, I should also mention I'm a VCP as well. One thing that we're going to try to do to help our VMware professionals in the audience is really try to give a clear translation of the equivalent Microsoft technologies. So when we talk about something such as live migration, we want to explain that that's going to be similar to a vMotion. That's going to help you conceptualize and understand these different concepts that we're talking to. And so to be clear, experience in Microsoft virtualization is not required, nor experience in Microsoft System Center. We're going to give you an introduction and show you all of these different technologies related to it and show you Microsoft's virtualization platforms. Now, we also want to mention that we have a lot of training available. It comes through the Microsoft Learning. We have official curriculum, so if you enjoy what you see, you want some more in-depth training, we have everything from one-day classroom events to five-day classroom events, and a lot of other certifications available from Microsoft Learning. Also, we want to invite you to join the MVA community. The Microsoft Virtual Academy is our free online training portal. And sometime today, we are going to reach 1 million users on this platform. Very close, so everybody go sign up now. Special bonus if you're the 1 millionth user. I'm joking, you don't get anything special. But you should sign up anyway, and since you're joining this Jumpstart, use this code that you see, and you will actually get bonus points as part of this event. So aka.msmva-voucher. Finally, I'm going to turn it over to Matt, and he's going to give us kind of a brief introduction of what to expect today.
Yep, thanks, Simon. So today we're focused on very much two key areas. Firstly, virtualization as a foundation, as a platform for virtualizing your key workloads and what that looks like from a scale, managing resources such as storage, how we secure and provide multi-tenancy and flexibility and agility, and finally, how do we make things resilient? How can we ensure that systems stay up in the event of issues, failures, whatever it may be? That's the morning, and the afternoon for us is going to focus on more so the management side of things. So going beyond just that virtualization layer and focusing on the cool stuff we can do primarily with System Center, 2012 SP1, around virtual machine management, monitoring, protection, service management, and lots of things like automation as well. We've got a packed agenda, we've got loads of cool stuff to talk about, and we really want to help you understand all of these and how they compare and contrast with the VMware technologies.
Great.
So the first module is going to focus on scalability, and we're going to give an intro to Hyper-V as well. Just for those who perhaps are new, perhaps coming from that VMware side and haven't experienced Hyper-V or perhaps have experienced it a little while ago. So without further ado, let's move on.
Let's jump to it.
So first things first, we'll focus on Hyper-V and then we'll look at the scale, performance, and density. And we'll do some comparison, compare and contrast with some of the VMware technology that's out there. So firstly, bringing people up to speed on Hyper-V specifically. What is Hyper-V and how do you get hold of it? Well, it's important to look back at where Hyper-V has come from. because Hyper-V isn't brand new. It's been around for a little while. In fact, it was introduced as part of Windows Server 2008 back in 2008. Initially, actually, a bit of trivia, when Windows Server 2008 shipped right at the start, which was early in 2008, Hyper-V was only available as a beta at the time.
That's right.
But come June, a couple of months later, it finally released as an update and was now baked into the operating system. And it gave customers the ability to virtualize key workloads, achieve good performance and scale, and really put a stamp for Microsoft, we're in the virtualization game and we want to take this further and help you. But at that point, that was the only way to get hold of Hyper-V. It was part of Windows Server. So I bought Windows Server 2008, at the time, standard, enterprise, or data center edition, and I ticked the box to turn on Hyper-V. But customers were also looking for different ways to get hold of Hyper-V. And that's why we brought to market a product called Hyper-V Server, which was a free download, anybody could use it, but it didn't have some of the capabilities that existed within Windows Server 2008 Hyper-V, like clustering was a good example. So whilst I could virtualize key workloads on single hosts, I couldn't provide any resiliency or availability for those workloads with that particular release. But we listened to feedback from customers and partners, and we brought to market an improved release not too long after that. So 2009, we sim-shipped Windows Server 2008 R2, which brought significant improvements for Hyper-V, and in addition, Hyper-V Server 2008 R2. So they launched together. And this time, Hyper-V Server was much more in line with some of the enterprise and data center features of Windows Server 2008 R2. So it brought in, for both of these versions, features like live migration, vMotion in the VMware world, cluster shared volumes for better utilization of storage, and something that I know is dear to your heart from the clustering side of things.
Certainly.
Process compatibility to allow us to move virtual machines between systems, host systems that had slightly different processors. We're not talking Intel to AMD migrations here, because that would just be magic. We're talking between the same family of processors, just giving you a little flexibility when you're building your clusters, a component we'll talk about a bit later on. We introduced the ability to hot add things like storage. So while a VM is running, add virtual disks to that virtual machine, giving you flexibility for certain scenarios. And there was a host of performance and scale improvements with this release as well. But fast forward a little bit further to 2011, so a little bit of a gap there, we brought to market Service Pack 1. And service packs traditionally, for the most part, don't bring additional capability, or at least they didn't at that time. We're seeing more and more now service packs seem to be bringing features as well as fixes and patches and so on. But Service Pack 1 for 2008 R2 brought two key features for Hyper-V specifically. Number one was dynamic memory, which allows organizations to achieve better density on the same size hardware. And we got some great results with partners and customers using that. And we'll look at how that's evolved going forward shortly in 2012. But also Remote FX, which gave organizations who were looking at VDI and virtualizing desktops a new angle to provide a rich graphical experience inside the virtual machine using graphics cards physically located in the servers, which was kind of a new thing at the time, but really, really powerful. And they were just two of the features that we introduced in Service Pack 1. So that brings us up to speed with where we are now with Windows Server 2012.
Well, let's talk a little more about the Hyper-V Server. You know, as we mentioned, it's one of our free downloads. So please, download it right now. If you haven't tried Microsoft Virtualization, go to downloads.microsoft.com, search for Hyper-V Server, and you can go literally download it right now.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people will come and ask, okay, great, I've got my Hyper-V host, but I kind of want to build up a lab, you know, build up a little private cloud, build up a cluster, get some shared storage so I can use that with my cluster. Can we provide, you know, a free solution? And actually, we can. We provide several different components that you can go download right now, set up as we're going through this course that will allow you to do that. So, of course, Hyper-V Server, it's a free download, and there's no expiration on this, so this isn't going to expire. But don't forget our eval center. So if you go to the TechNet evaluation site, you can download Windows Server 2012, System Set to 2012, and using these products as well, you can get your enterprise-class storage. Microsoft comes with an iSCSI target, and you can also download this as an independent download as well. Use this iSCSI target on a separate server. You can set up clustered storage. You've got the free Hyper-V server. You've got your eval. So you can actually get up and running today, trying everything out.
Yep, there's loads of stuff you can download. But don't forget to sign up for the MVA as well, where we want to get to the million users.
And big announcement, we did just hit a million users. So thank you, everybody. Woo!
Free bubble gum for somebody. So, a little bit more about Hyper-V Server. What is it all about? What does it do? What does it look like? Well, before we take a quick look at what it looks like, in case you've never seen it before, Hyper-V Server, as Simon said, is a free download. Anybody can get it. For enterprises, for small businesses, for whoever. You can download it, you can run it on the same hardware that Windows Server 2012 will run on, so you're good there. Running on a laptop, whilst you could do it, you may need another laptop to manage it with the remote management tools, and that's something we'll explain as we go forward with management a bit later on. But what does it contain? Well, it contains that core hypervisor, the core thin Hyper-V layer that's allowing you to abstract and virtualize workloads, virtual machines. It's got the same driver model as Windows Server, and just the core virtualization components. So for instance, I can't turn on in Hyper-V Server domain controller. I can't magically make it into a domain controller, for instance, or turn it into a remote desktop server, what was formerly terminal services. It's designed just to do the Hyper-V bits. Now, it has a smaller footprint because it doesn't have all of these other roles and capabilities. A minimal overhead because there's fewer services running, less patching as well because it doesn't have all of the other components that a full GUI edition of Windows Server would have, certainly. And because it's a Windows image, it's still a WIM file at its source. When you download the ISO, and if you have a look inside that ISO, there's still a WIM image, just in the same way Windows Server 2008 was a WIM image. 2008 R2 or WIM image, meaning any tools I have in my environment that deploy WIM images, which we'll talk about shortly, I could use to deploy Hyper-V Server, so it can integrate in. But the biggest thing for all of the IT pros and for us passionate about technology is it's full to bursting with features. There's so much stuff in there. Everything we talk about today in this first section, up until the main break when we start to look at System Center, all of this stuff we talk about in Hyper-V is in Hyper-V Server. So that's great, which means people can achieve massive scale, great performance with a free solution. So should we take a look?
Let's do it, yeah. Yeah.
So let me pop into my demo environment here. And let me bring up my...
Now, while Matt does that, you know, one of the things about Hyper-V Server, it's built using minimal GUI. So, you know, kind of equivalent to Core, where you don't have a full, rich graphical user interface. And so some people, they have some concerns about that, right? You know, I've actually got to do a login, do some scripting, do PowerShell, scary coding stuff, right? You're not developers. Well, one thing that's important to remember is Microsoft's invested a lot of time on remote management. So while you have these systems that may not have a full graphical user interface, you can still connect remotely to them using Hyper-V Manager, Failover Cluster Manager, System Center Virtual Machine Manager. You can monitor them with Operations Manager. And then we have a product that's designed for desktops, so your Windows 8 client, called Remote Server Administration Tools, or RSAT. And that basically gives you the full set of graphical tools, and you can connect to these remote systems.
Yep. So if we look at Hyper-V Server here on the screen now, you'll see, I don't know what Simon's talking about, it doesn't have a rich management interface. I mean, this is rich management interfaces at its very best. This is a SC or SConfig. It's a bespoke GUI that you'll find within Hyper-V Server that allows me to do some of the more common tasks, like join it to a domain, change the computer name, add a local admin, run Windows Update, those kind of things. But how did I get here? Well, I just did a regular deployment, of which we'll talk about some of the options shortly. In this case, I just used the DVD that I downloaded off the web as guided by Simon. So download, install, made a few setting choices on install, the out-of-box experience that many of you will be used to with installing Windows Server or Windows Client manually, you know, choose time zone, all of that kind of stuff, product key. And once that's done, I'm left with this screen. And all I needed to do really was run Windows Update, check all of the things were configured correctly, configure the network and so on, and then I'm good to go. But one of the new improvements within Hyper-V Server locally in 2012 is the inclusion of PowerShell. So I can run PowerShell commands locally here. I'm by no means a PowerShell guru, but things like get Windows feature. Let's see what happens here. There we go, and it brings back all of the features that I can... This powerful demo on the fly here, all of the features that I can run on Hyper-V Server. If this was Windows Server 2012, there'd be loads in that list. But here it's just a smaller subset of the features and roles that I can enable within Hyper-V Server. And you'll see some of them are enabled, but most of them are not enabled at this point. So that's just a little look at Hyper-V Server. But if I minimize that particular machine and I go over to my Hyper-V Manager here, which is running on a GUI edition of Windows Server 2012, what I can see here is I can point Hyper-V Manager, which is the MMC interface that I can use to manage Hyper-V. This isn't System Center. Okay, so this is a precursor to System Center. We're just looking at the core Windows Server interfaces here, the MMC. This could be a Windows 8 client machine running the remote server admin tools, as Simon pointed out. But I've pointed it at Hyper-V5, so that is that GUI-less installation that I've just shown you a few minutes ago, and I can manage, control, create virtual machines, and so on and so forth. So it's really easy. I mean, it looks difficult to start with, but it's a real streamlined way of deploying and managing Hyper-V, because you're managing it all remotely. If you're in a smaller environment and you're more comfortable with local management, maybe you've only got two hosts and you want to log into each of them individually and manage them there, that's fine. You would use the GUI edition of Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V. It's just a choice you can make. So hopefully that gives you an idea of what Hyper-V Server is all about, just generally. But what about these deployment options? I've alluded to a couple of different choices around how you get Hyper-V out there. Now, with Microsoft, and I'm going to focus on VMware in a second as well for those VMware admins who are watching and want to understand how it differs and compares. With Microsoft, as you know, I can get the ISO off the website, put it on a DVD, and install into my server. That's fine. And that's going to take 20 minutes, maybe less, depending on your server, and we'll be up and running in no time. Get the latest updates and drivers, and we're good to go. But I can also put that same ISO on a bootable USB and install it in the server from the USB. That's not installing to a USB stick in the server. That's using the USB as bootable media. So that's another option, equally fast. But in my environment, I've also set up Pixie, so the ability to boot across the network using some of the inbox Windows Server tools. So for me now, I've got a Windows Deployment Services server, so a Windows Server 2012 server with the WDS role enabled. I've imported the Hyper-V server image from the DVD that I downloaded, and now it's stored centrally. So whenever I need to re-image a physical host, I can boot the machine, press F12, connect it to the Pixie server, and it will deploy that same Hyper-V server across the network. And Windows Deployment Services in 2012 gives me a little bit more granularity about drivers and configuration options as well. So it's really easy, even for that small organization, to streamline how they deploy Windows Server and, in addition, Hyper-V. But if I want to go a little bit more automated and a little bit more clever and streamlined and achieve something like a light touch where I'm having less interaction during the deployment process, then I can use tools like the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, which is a solution accelerator, another free download that you can get online, that enables me to enhance WDS as that foundation. So WDS is still the engine of deployment across the network, but MDT gives me more control and customization of what I'm deploying, enhancing the driver control, the roles and features and so on. So that's almost like a good Windows Deployment Services, better MDT, equally it's free as well, just install it on top. But if I want that most comprehensive and integrated solution for deploying Hyper-V and Windows Server at scale, then I want to be looking at some of the System Center components, like Configuration Manager, or alternatively, as we'll see later on in demonstration as well, Virtual Machine Manager. So all of those are different options I've got. But with VMware, similar options. I can download the ISO of ESXi 5.1, put it on a DVD or boot it from a USB stick, and away I go. But I can also use Pixie. So I can store my ESXi files on a Pixie location and point my host at that and boot. But new in 5 and improved in 5.1 of vSphere was a feature known as auto deploy, which gives the IT administrator the ability to centrally deploy ESXi images to physical servers from a central vCenter source or the auto deploy server. So similar to what Microsoft is offering in the Pixie world, with some of the System Center tools and some of the other capabilities in WDS, VMware are offering that similar capability through auto deploy. But there's three different types. So with auto deploy, I can deploy an ESXi image to a physical host that's effectively stateless. So there's no, perhaps it's diskless. ESXi is running in memory. I can do stateless caching and a stateful install as well, where I'm similar to the Microsoft approach, where I'm pushing an image over the network and laying it down on media inside that host. So there's options on both sides about how you get that particular hypervisor out there. So when we look at Hyper-V for the rest of the session, we're going to look at four key areas. We're going to look at scale, performance and density, in this first section, then we're going to take a break. We're going to look at security, multi-tenancy, how we can be flexible and agile, moving workloads around, doing some of the cool stuff around live migration. And then we're going to look at resiliency. Okay, so we're going to help you understand all four of these areas and how they compare and contrast, not just with vSphere, the full bells and whistles Enterprise Plus edition, but also with the free vSphere hypervisor. Some people refer to this as ESXi. So ESXi, vSphere hypervisor, the term can be interchangeable. So that's what we're going to focus on from a Hyper-V perspective. So let's dive in. Let's take a look at some of the numbers, the real speeds and feeds around what Hyper-V is bringing to market in this particular release. And compared to 2008 R2, the performance has just gone through the roof. If you look at logical processor support, somebody in Microsoft must have a server that's got 320 logical processors.
Someone does, right?
Somebody must do, because they've tested it. I would like to meet this person, and when they're not looking, have their server away and get it in my office. Because that server, let's think about a logical processor. So if you think about common deployment today, two CPUs, eight cores. Let's say that's fairly common, I suppose, nowadays. Those cores may be hyper-threaded. So you're talking two processors, eight cores, hyper-threaded. So that's 16 cores, 32 logical processors. And that's fairly common. And I'm saying that Hyper-V in 2012 will support 320 logical processors. That's huge. It's a foundation, not just for today, but for the future. So if you're an organization who's thinking about, wow, do we buy massive hardware going forward? Fine, Hyper-V is going to support that. Not just on a processor perspective, but also memory. Massive amounts of memory. Now, again, somebody must have a server with 4 terabytes of RAM. And I'm guessing the DIMM size is there 32 gig DIMMs yet? I don't know if they've been released, but it must be 16 gig as a minimum, yeah, with a lot of slots. So that must be a beefy machine. But when we think about how many VMs we can run, what kind of density can we achieve on that kind of host? Well, if you think about active VMs per host, this might not be a figure that's achieved by many organizations today, if any. But in the future, we'll look back and laugh in a couple of years' time when we say, oh, you were virtualizing at 4 VMs to one host. Well, you know, now in X number of years, we're at 1,000 VMs per host. That's what Hyper-V can support today. And they must have tested it. Maybe on that behemoth server that we've talked about before.
So I can actually talk a little bit about that testing, because back in my days on the cluster team, we actually did this scale testing to try to get 8,000 virtual machines on a cluster. And so essentially, we went in our lab, got all of our hardware together, figured out what our best hardware was, realized, hey, we still don't have good enough hardware. So we went out and rented a bunch of really, really powerful hardware for a couple months. Went through all our beta, the release candidate, the RTM, gradually increased the scale from 2,000 to 4,000 to 5,000 up to 8,000 virtual machines. And this is using a lot of the greatest state-of-the-art hardware. So what's going to continue to happen, though, as our products evolve, as the next service pack comes out, as the next version of Windows come out, we're going to keep getting better hardware, we're going to keep testing, yep, and you're going to see these numbers continue to climb. Yep. So while we do have the industry-leading numbers now, don't expect those to stay. We're going to keep bumping these up as we continue to get better hardware.
Correct. And just to drill in on some of the VM-specific stuff now. So Simon's talked about clusters, and right at the bottom of the table, you can see that we've gone in Hyper-V 2008 R2 from 16 nodes, physical servers connected together in a cluster, supporting up to 1,000 VMs, which was pretty scalable for most organizations. But we've moved on. We've moved to 64 physical nodes and 8,000 VMs. That's a huge increase. That's massive scalability. And some of the stuff we'll talk about later around how we can be agile and move workloads now between clusters very flexibly means that the cluster is really just a boundary for resiliency. It's not a boundary for migration now like it was in 2008 R2. But let's focus on some of the VM-specific bits. So memory per virtual machine, 1 terabyte. In all editions, so Hyper-V server, Windows Server 2012 standard with Hyper-V, Windows Server 2012 data center with Hyper-V. In terms of virtual processors per VM, we've gone from supporting 4 to 64 virtual procs per VM. Again, big increase. Helps organizations virtualize those big mission-critical tier 1 workloads. And with these kind of figures, our analysis that we've done internally and working with customers, 99% of our SQL Server workloads out there can be virtualized on this platform. That's huge. And there are some big databases out there, big SQL systems running some mission-critical line-of-business apps as well. So we're confident that we're delivering a fantastic platform. The final area to pull out is NUMA. And we'll talk a bit about NUMA later, but NUMA enables Hyper-V to improve the performance for virtual workloads inside the guest operating system. And I'll talk about what that means in a minute, because I want to make sure we compare and contrast with what VMware are doing. So if you look at comparing with the vSphere Hypervisor and Enterprise Plus, you'll see that Hyper-V supports twice as much memory as Enterprise Plus on the host and twice as many logical processors. That's not to say that the numbers that VMware have there are by any means small. Again, I used the example before, two processors with 8 cores hyper-threaded, 32 logical processors, and vSphere supports 160 in both the free vSphere Hypervisor download and Enterprise Plus. So what you're seeing there is plenty of room for growth on both platforms. We support a lot of virtual processors per host, a lot of virtual CPUs per VM as well. But what's interesting with VMware, if we talk about physical memory of the host systems, just to go back to that, the vSphere Hypervisor, if you download that for free, you get your license key off the VMware website to run that, to virtualize a couple of key workloads, it's capped at 32 gig of RAM physical memory. Now, if you install it on a machine that's got bigger than that memory, so if you're installing it on a machine that's got 128 gig, because you think, you know what, I want to use this free hypervisor, but I don't need all of the rest of the vSphere components, I'm just looking for some consolidation, then you're not going to be able to use the rest of that memory. Okay, when you come to put your key in, it's going to be blocked. It needs to be 32 gig or less. When we think about virtual processors, the free vSphere hypervisor and a number of the lower SKUs within vSphere are capped at 8 virtual processors per VM, which is fine for many workloads, but for some of those bigger workloads, you're going to have to upgrade to either the Enterprise Edition, not shown on the slide, but that includes 32 virtual procs, or you're going to have to upgrade to the Enterprise Plus Edition, which provides 64 virtual procs. And there's links and information about where all these statistics and speeds and feeds are taken from at the bottom of the slide. So when you think about scale, Hyper-V is pretty much unrestricted for what you need. Now, and as Simon said, that's not going to stand still. We're going forward, and we're always going to evolve that as well.
Now, let me ask you, on that screen, you said Hyper-V in 2012. Now, is that just in the full versions that you have to buy, or do these numbers also apply to the free Hyper-V version?
Good question. The reason I used Hyper-V, generically speaking, rather than Hyper-V Server or Windows Server Hyper-V, is it's in every version. So if you're a customer who traditionally buys standard edition of Windows Server, maybe on every couple of years, every 3 years, you might perhaps refresh. And you're always buying standard, but you are aware that in previous versions of standard edition of Windows Server, it didn't have all of the features of Enterprise or Data Center. Well, standard edition now has all of the same features as Data Center edition. And from a Hyper-V perspective, all of the Hyper-V features we talk about are in the free Hyper-V server, number one, Windows Server 2012 standard Hyper-V, number two, and Windows Server 2012 Data Center Hyper-V. So all three of those ways of getting Hyper-V, everything we talk about today.
Great, thanks.
So yeah, it's in the free version. When we look at clustering, you can't cluster the free ESXi hypervisor. It's standalone, it can't be clustered, meaning those workloads on there have no resiliency, no availability. Now, from a Microsoft perspective, with Hyper-V, even with Hyper-V server, I can still do that, I can cluster, as we'll see later on, but you'll still need some form of shared storage, be it Fibre Channel, iSCSI, or it could be SMB storage for that cluster now, which is new in 2012. When we compare that with vSphere 5.1 Enterprise Plus, you'll see that the cluster sizes are half the size of that of Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V and Hyper-V Server. So we're delivering fantastic scale, great performance, and it's all in the box, even with the free edition. But I want to wrap up this first section before we break by talking a bit about NUMA. NUMA, when you think about these big systems, think about that 320 logical proc system with 4 terabytes of RAM, wherever it may be in Microsoft. That kind of system, when you think about adding processors to physical hosts, normally in many systems, a processor is tied to a certain amount of memory. So you see when you're specking up a server that you want to buy, if you buy it with one processor, you can run a max of maybe 64 gig of RAM. You buy it with two processors and you can get to 128 gig of RAM, because the processors are almost tied to that memory. And when you think about NUMA, these NUMA topology and these NUMA nodes, processor working in conjunction with local memory that's part of its NUMA node, is high performance. But whenever there's workloads that need a processor to utilize memory that's outside of its NUMA node, the performance is going to be slightly less than it would if it was accessing memory in its local NumaNode. And that's in the physical world. So applications like SQL installed on a physical Windows server can take advantage of these things like NUMA. So SQL knows about that kind of stuff as a workload. So does IIS, the new Windows web server in Windows Server 2012. But what we've done is taken that idea, that topology for NUMA, and we've passed it through to the guest operating system as well. And both Microsoft and VMware are delivering this capability in their most recent releases, which means if I'm virtualizing workloads like SQL Server, like IIS, the Windows web server in 2012, it's NUMA aware. So if I'm building VMs with lots of processors and big amounts of memory, they're mapping accordingly onto the relevant NUMA nodes in the physical world, which optimizes performance. So that's a little bit about scale performance. We'll talk about density after the break, because we're going to talk about things like dynamic memory and how we realize greater density. But I think at that point, it's time to break.
That's right. So just some quick reminders. All of our breaks will be approximately 10 minutes. Stay tuned. We'll keep the countdown window here. Also, make sure that you sign up for the Microsoft Virtual Academy, some of our other training courses. And don't forget to check out all of the polls that we have. So in some cases, you might be in full screen mode. You might not see what else is going on around. But don't forget, we have a chat window with a live Q&A from a lot of Microsoft and VMware experts. And additionally, we have a poll running at the bottom of the screen. Now, we'll see you in 10 minutes, and we got some great content coming up. Stay tuned.